Welcome to the Science of Sports Recovery Podcast. I'm your host, Jace Kraft, and today on the show, I'm introducing you to Jen Giles. Jen has 23 years of experience working with athletes in all sports of all ages. She sits on the USOC, the United States Olympic Committee, dietitian registry, and works with Olympic hopefuls, NCAA athletes, prep school athletes, adult athletes, youth athletes, you name it. If you're an athlete, she can work with you. And most recently, Jennifer has begun teaching sports nutrition as an adjunct professor at Columbia University, her alma mater. Today, we're going to chat about periodization of nutrition to reflect your training schedule. And if you're like, what the heck is periodization? Well, keep listening because this could truly be a game changer for you. Let's get into it.
You're listening to the Science of Sports Recovery Podcast. Each week, we explore how to recover more efficiently from training so you can work out harder and realize your full potential. This is the Science of Sports Recovery Podcast.
Jen, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Awesome. I want to start with just like what sports and athletics mean to you as a person. Obviously, you have a background in athletics and now sports nutrition, but what does like being an athlete mean to you?
Wow, that's a great question. I think overall, it means everything to me, first of all, because I think sports is a reflection of life. And I think that the time and the dedication and the perseverance that it takes to be an athlete at any level, you know, no matter what level you're at, is reflective upon your personality. And you carry that over into other aspects of your life. So I really think it's kind of the foundation where we learn all the tools we need to be the best person we can be.
Yeah. When did you realize that like sport and life like have this huge crossover?
I think I realized it probably in my 20s. So maybe a little bit later than most athletes, because I kind of took it for granted until then, until I really was training for my first marathon, where I figured out, wow, this takes a lot of time and dedication, and I have to sacrifice a lot for this goal. And then it dawned on me like, wow, this is kind of like life.
Yeah.
The first time it really hit me.
Yeah. Well, you're not alone in that, because it was probably right around my early 20s when I started to realize that too. I was like late college, just out of college. And I'm like, wow, I've learned a lot from running and going through, you know, sporting organizations and just relationships and being a leader and all that kind of stuff. So why did you then choose to go into sports nutrition as opposed to, you know, kind of a general nutritionist or dietitian or field?
Yeah, I think it came down to that. Like in my 20s, I actually was on my path to medical school, believe it or not. And I was training for marathons. And I thought, you know, if I go to medical school, this is a little bit selfish of me, but if I go to medical school, I will not have time to train for marathons. And it's what I love most.
Yeah.
And then the more I got into making the connection between food and performance, I thought, you know what, I figured it out. I've figured out many different ways since then, but I thought I figured it out then. And I thought, wow, I can really help people figure this out. And I kind of knew that that was my calling, quote unquote. So I switched gears and I thought, you know, if I go into this field, I know I'll always stay active. Mm-hmm. I'll always eat well. I'll always have this focus and I will have an impact on others being able to do that. So that was really my light bulb moment.
Yeah. Cool. So where did you get your start in athletics then? Like, obviously the love had to come from somewhere. Was it your parents? Was it like you just friends that were involved in stuff, or how do you like get started in sports?
It's interesting because I mean, youth athletics is, you know, town sports, all that kind of stuff. I was involved in soccer, basketball, swimming, softball. I kind of did it all as a young athlete, but I wasn't super passionate about it. I was kind of just doing it because everybody else did. And then high school came and I played softball, and I really did love softball, but, and I swam and I loved swimming, but it just never was good enough, to be honest, to do it in college. Sure. So went on to college, and something dawned on me in college, probably after that freshman 15/40, somewhere in between there. And I grabbed a pair of shoes. I went to the running store, grabbed a pair of running shoes, because I had just, mm-hmm. you see people running out all the time. And I thought, maybe I can do that. Maybe that will just get me back in shape and blah, blah, blah. Like I knew there was an athlete inside me somewhere. I just didn't know how to get her out and be better. Like it was better, but I just couldn't make the connection. So long story short, I got the pair of running shoes. I was on vacation with my family and I went out and I ran, just ran. I didn't care about form, speed, anything. I just ran. And mm-hmm. I made it 3/4 of a mile. Before I pulled a little muscle in my back. 19 years old. Nobody should pull a muscle when they're 19 years old. And so I had to walk home, like head down. And for some crazy reason, I put the sneakers on again the next day and the next day and the next day. And somewhere over the course of the next couple of weeks, I got that runner's high, you know, and I just thought, oh, I love this. This is so great. And I hadn't changed anything about my nutrition at that point. And a couple months into it, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to change my nutrition. I wonder if that would make me better. And so I read like Runner's World magazines and every article I could get my hands on. And I made small changes along the way. And that kind of lit my fire because I started to get better. And that's when I kind of said, you know what, I really am an athlete and I'm going to focus more on this. And that's the beginning of my story.
Cool. Your story, like, I think it's a similarity between a lot of people where they start to take a sport more seriously. And the first thing they do is up their training. And then eventually you get to a point where like, okay, I can't train anymore because I can't recover from the training that I'm doing. So where is the next step? And then that's usually the light bulb goes off. It's my nutrition. Like, how do I fuel my body better to do better workouts and stuff. But before we get into that, just contrasting your sports nutrition before you kind of went through college, learned all this stuff to now, take us to, you know, high school you. Where were you at as far as nutrition goes?
I played softball and I was my biggest sports nutrition snack on the sidelines was Cool Ranch Doritos. No joke. And this is there.
They're good.
this is in the 80s. I mean, I probably haven't had them since the 80s either. But yeah, I mean, that's what we would do. And it did not even dawn on me that that was not a great sports nutrition snack. It just, I don't know if it was the 80s or if it was just my mindset or we didn't have the knowledge back then or what, but that's what we would do. No wonder I wasn't a great athlete. I wasn't fueling my body well at all. For swim practice, we would have a hot dog truck pull up to high school right up, you know, after school, before practice. And we would down hot dogs from the hot dog truck before we get in the pool. And I have memories of like burping up hot dog during some practice, which is awful.
Gross.
So, I mean, there's this dark change. And then freshman year in college, it's all about pizza and beer and going to the vending machines for Snickers bars during studying for exams and whatnot. So yeah, there was minimal thought on my part about food and performance. I just didn't think about it at all.
Yeah. So then when you did start thinking about it, I would imagine it wasn't hard to find places where you could make, you know, little adjustments.
It's interesting because I think the world is a lot easier now to make such changes. I mean, this was in the 90s, the early 90s, where it dawned on me that I had to make some changes and there wasn't a lot of healthy options out. There wasn't places where you can get smoothies or acai bowls or, you know, chopped salad places. There just wasn't. And I was living on campus. So it was a lot of salad bars, baked potatoes, grilled chicken, you know, and I was just kind of piecing together all the information, but it didn't have a lot offered to me. So I kind of went through the motions until I was, you know, living off campus and had more control over my food intake and grocery store shopping and that I really started to put together nutrients. But much better.
Got it.
It was definitely a process. Cool.
Yeah. And we'll get into more of kind of like the ins and outs of that here, but I want to just touch on like, what are your training is like now? I know you do triathlons, marathons, or like, what are you kind of focused on now as an athlete?
So like I said, like in my 20s, I was training for marathons primarily, half marathons, marathons. I would do a bunch of 10Ks mm-hmm. too. And then in my very end of my 20s, probably 28 or 29, I got a little burnt out from all the running. And I decided to go back to my swim roots and hop in the pool and swim. And then I said to my husband, let's just buy bikes and start biking. Neither one of us biked before. And, you know, a friend said, let's do a triathlon. Yeah. So we did. And the first little mini triathlon we did, we got hooked. And it was probably a little before 30, right? And we just did them all the time, everywhere. We traveled to do tries. And really ever since then, that's been my true love. I mean, I'm a runner. Foundationally, I'm a runner, and it's probably the sport I'm best at and I feel most comfortable doing. Like if you give me a choice, I'll go for a run. But the world of triathlon, I think, has made me a stronger runner. It's made me more well-balanced. It's prevented a lot of injuries, mm-hmm. I think. It's just really fun and I love it. So I'm still super passionate about triathlon.
Yeah. How, like, for me, triathlon seems one of the most time-intensive sports to train for, because you got three of them and two of them are like non-impact, you know, so you can do them a lot. You know, so how do you balance like training and, you know, your job, your family? Like how do you
well,
do
some days are easier than others. And it's a lot of finding the little pieces of time throughout your day or throughout your week. You know, I mean, I've gone to so many of my kids' sports practices and just run around the field or run around the hockey rink or, you know, just things like that if I don't have enough time, or it's getting up early or it's working out in the evenings. It's never real consistent, to be honest, which is probably not great, but I have to work out when I can, whenever I can. So I always just I have my backpack of workout clothes in my car at all times, just in case I can sneak a run or. So it's really time consuming. Sure. I think a lot of it depends too on the distances. Like you think, the years I was training for Ironman, like a full distance triathlon, were very time consuming and definitely overwhelming to have kids and a job and all that other kind of stuff. I think the shorter races are manageable. It's consistent training every day, but it's not overwhelming.
Sure. And once you have like years of training under your belt, I'm sure like the shorter distances, and in my experience, like you don't have to do this huge build up for them. And it's just kind of like a stay where you are in shape. And then maybe a block of training where you're like, okay, I have time in my life now to kind of focus on this. So I'm going to do that.
It's before cumulative. The race. You're right. The training is cumulative. You know that. So the more years you put into it, you know, you have that foundation to pull upon. So if you slack off for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, then it's still there. It's like riding a bicycle, comes right back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had like the biggest indicator of cumulative training that I like was kind of blown away by in myself was, so I started running really as like going into fifth grade, the summer of going into fifth grade, because my brothers, they went out for cross country. I just like, I'm going to do what my brothers do or whatever, you know, and kind of started running in more of a structured form rather than just, you know, on the playground or, you know, football or whatever, backyard stuff. So I've been really running since then to the end of college. The end of college, I was so burnt out that I just like stopped running for a while. I was running once a week. I would do long runs with my team, my alumni team at that point, once a week. So I would do like, you know, 18 to 20 miles a week, all on Saturday. I kept that up until like through the summer, till the weather got bad. Didn't train for like literally no running, no cardio, nothing for 3 months. And then I got asked to be on a 4x4 in late January or early February. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do a 4x4, I might as well enter in the mile too. And so I just entered in the slow heat and, you know, whatever, ran the mile, most painful mile of my life, mind you. But I still broke 5 minutes. You know, I was a 4:10 miler in college, but I was able to run like a 4:54 without training, won the heat. And I was just thinking, like, there's people that were like in in the middle of their training that I beat. Yeah. And I hadn't trained for like 3 months. And I'm not saying that to brag. Yeah. I'm just saying that to like 12 years of training got right. me to the point where I could take 3 months off.
That's an amazing
still,
example of what your body can do, right?
So, yeah. And then now I'm coming back into training for Spartan races and obstacle course races. Right. And right. like, I'm not starting from zero, you know. Yeah, anyways, that was kind of a tangent on that. Yeah, but I want to get into it. You had mentioned that you had kids during your training. You know, you've gone through 4 pregnancies and now, you know, obviously 4 little ones as well. How did you balance training with pregnancy? Because, and just a, you know, disclaimer, this is a selfish question because my wife is due in March. So yeah, we're just kind of like trying to navigate how she's going to come back to running.
So she's a runner as well.
Pregnancy. Yeah. That's how we met. We met in college.
That's awesome.
As both runners. So,
yeah. I mean, I ran through my first pregnancy. You know, I was just determined to make it through the whole pregnancy. And I did. I ran up until probably the last week or two, where it just didn't feel so good anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I walked. And I actually walked like 4 miles the day I had her. So, wow. So that was great. I was just really gung ho. The other ones I scaled back a little bit. Your body feels a little bit different, or you just don't feel the need. So my second and third, I probably ran up until like 7 months and then I walked. And then my fourth, maybe 6 months mm-hmm. and then I walked. But my fourth, I really swam so much more. So I just traded sports, but you know, if it made me feel good, and it was almost like I couldn't get through the day without moving because it made me feel normal. When you're pregnant, you feel very abnormal. there's an alien inside your body and you know, you're tired, you're hungry, you don't feel good, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I did it to feel good. I wanted to sweat a little bit. I just wanted to feel good. If I had a run and a shower, I would feel great. That'd be a good day. So I just felt the need to do it. And I feel like it made my pregnancies healthier. And I want to think it made my kids healthier. Who knows if that's really true, but did you say the extra oxygen consumption makes your kids healthier? So I'm going to go with that.
Awesome. What about like after birth? Like what was kind of the timeline as far as what recovery did you need? Did it vary from kid to kid?
Yeah.
How'd you come
back? Yeah, another great question. Because I was super worried about that too. You know, as runners, you're like, think of it like an injury. Every time you get injured, you're like, when can I run? Can I run through the injury? So I remember asking my doctor, like, how long do I have to take off before I can run? And he's like, wait, at least 10 days until you get out and walk. And I was like, I'm not waiting 10 days. And I think I did wait like 6 days and I couldn't walk. And like, I think I took a couple steps and I was like, forget this, and went back. You're beat up. Your body's beat up. So after 10 or 15 days, I think I went out and just walked probably for the first couple weeks. And then as soon as I felt ready to kind of jog, I did, but it takes a while. And that was one of the hardest times for me, especially after my first pregnancy, because I didn't understand that it was going to take a while. You know, you're going from you're really running super slow. I think I was running like 11 minute miles or something. So you're depressed because you're running so slow, slug and get back. And in hindsight, I would say 3 or 4 months and I was back to like the equal pace that I was before her. And I think I got better with each kid. Like I think after that first initial, like, oh my gosh, I'm a slug. And the second one, I came back a little sooner. Third one sooner, because you just learn. Mm. And again, I kind of had the crutch of all 3 sports. So I knew I could swim. Like,
you
was
could
on my body. The running was the last to come back, to be honest. It took the longest for my running speed to come back.
Yeah, I mean, it's impactful. Run. We actually just talked about this on, I can't remember if that podcast is going to be the one before this or the one after this, but with face standing, we talked about just how, like, with every step you're putting in 3 times like your body weight and force into your foot, then off the chain and stuff. So like comparative to swimming where it's like, you're floating, you know, it's very
an interesting thing too, that your wife may be interested in is I was actually faster after having my second baby than I was before my first baby. Like my speed, and I was in my early 30s. So I don't know if age has anything to do with it, but yes, I was a better runner after having children. And I have this argument with women all the time. Like, I think it's because after you have a baby, you think, I can do anything. Man, if I did that, if I did a mile.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Like, if you're talking about like pain tolerance, you know, especially like in a sport, like running, swimming, biking, it's really about, okay, your fitness level, but also then your pain tolerance level. Like how far are you willing to push your own body into this like pain cave, which is a phrase I stole from an Olympian rower.
That's great.
But yeah, anyways, I digress on that. I want to get it more into the nutrition part of this. So in my intro, you know, I mentioned we're talking about periodization of nutrition in training. So before we get into like the weeds of what that is, can you just explain when it comes to nutrition, what is periodization?
Okay. Well, mean? If you're familiar with periodization and training, it's very similar. It reflects it. So it's almost like a mirror. Yeah. So when we periodize, I can never say that word right. Training, we're building up, right? So you're training and you're building up your mileage, and then you're building up your speed intervals, and technically it's on a whole year cycle or a season cycle, depending on your sport. And there's different phases. So there may be a strength phase, a muscular endurance phase, an endurance phase, and then there's a resting phase or an off season. Nutrition always has to reflect the phases that you're in your training. So basically, to put it really simply, is whatever you're training, your fueling has to support that. So if you're in an off season, your fueling has to reflect off season. You can't be eating the same amount of protein, carbohydrates, and fats when you're not running or not training or not working out. But when you're building, then you have to fuel a little bit more. When you're racing, you're in a race phase, you have to fuel a little bit differently. And there's different factors to that. The timing is different. The composition of nutrition is different. The quantities are different. So you really have to base it all on your training, depending on what sport you're in.
Cool. So when it comes to like endurance sports, that's where I'm most familiar with as far as like the periodization of training. So we'll kind of stick with that. And then if you're in like involved in a team sport, just think of like when we talk about these phases, what that might look like for you. And then we can, you know, fill in the gaps from there. Or you can reach out to Jen to fill in the gaps wherever we miss here. But so starting in like the base phase is probably what it's most commonly referred to as, but you're either coming off an off season, starting from zero, you're just really building that aerobic base from a low mileage or low volume to, you know, building up to like where you're going to sustain throughout the season. What should your nutrition look like at that stage?
That's actually the best stage to start, because that's your foundation. So you really want to focus. You're still focusing on the same types of foods, whole foods, less processed foods, minimizing sugar, minimizing saturated fat. But when you think of an endurance athlete, we're burning a ton of carbohydrates. That's the first fuel your body pulls from. When you're in a base phase, you're not really running super long distances. You're not really doing super high intervals. So you don't need the high volume of carbohydrates during your base phase. So we're really focused during that phase on more lean proteins, more whole grain carbohydrates in a little lesser quantities, and healthy fats, because that's going to be the basis of what you're going to pull from when you start building.
That makes sense.
And I like to use that time to really focus on getting different fruits and vegetables and micronutrients in your diet, because that's going to build your muscles and all the tissues in your body that you're going to need when you do start that training. And you'll be so much healthier and stronger when you do that. So base phase is a great place to start. Reevaluate what you're eating, the timing of your eating, the quality of your nutrients, and then you can kind of build on that as you go into your next phase.
Yeah, cool. So what are your thoughts are as far as like, you know, there's kind of like two schools of thought when it comes to, at least in my mind, and when it comes to dieting, you're like either saying I can have everything except this, or these are the things I can have. And that's what I'm going to stick with. Meaning like, for an example, I'm not having ice cream, or I'm not having, you know, candy, or I'm not having brownies. You know, those would be like the nots, versus, hey, I'm going to focus on fruits, vegetables, you know, good fats, good meat, have that, get full on those things. And then if I feel like it some days, supplement it with, well, I don't know if supplement's the right word, but, you know, treat myself to ice cream, or, you know, these kinds of things. What are your thoughts on just like those two different thoughts of approaching a diet from a sporting
I think there's
standpoint?
A huge psychological component to it. And I think that, well, my first thought is we're athletes, right? And we're really putting a lot of energy and training and time into our sport. And we're burning, to put it simply again, we're burning a lot of calories. So I think there is a room for those treats, because not that you deserve them so much, but there's extra room for it because we're doing so much. And I think the second we say, I'm not going to have something, then it's like, okay, we're putting that on the forefront of our mind. Okay, no, I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to have it. Oh God, I need it. I need it. You know, it just makes it, more desirable almost to say, I'm not going to have it. So I think it's healthier. And I think you'll have more success if you say, I'm going to have it on a day when I know I'm getting all these other nutrients and my body's good. Like, get out all the good stuff in first, and then treat yourself to something that you really like. But on that same note, I also say, pick the treats, pick the 5 or 10 treats that you like. Is it ice cream? Is it cookies? Is it cake? Is it candy? Whatever it is. And if stuff that you really love and that's worth it, that you're going to enjoy the most. Like, don't nibble on Swedish fish if that's not your favorite sweet, you know?
Yeah.
It happens to be my favorite, but, but I also like ice cream. So I put the, you know, you put yourself on the list and you say, I'm going to have this X number of times a week because I like it and I enjoy it. It makes me feel good. But I wouldn't do something like nibble on Cool Ranch Doritos because they're not, they don't make me feel good, or whatever the food is for you. So I do prioritize the fun stuff, as long as you're getting the good stuff in first.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so base phase, we're more focused on healthy proteins, fats, less focused, not totally getting rid of carbohydrates, because we are having that longer endurance stuff. If we get into now like phase two and phase three kind of blend together, when you're talking like the initial workouts and then like your high intensity, like phase three, you don't care about any races or performances during this time. It's just like, how hard can you work out essentially and recover from, obviously. So those two phases, like the ramp up period, phase two and then phase three, is there a difference in nutrition? Like, should we talk about them one at a time, or?
I think the way you put it was great. They kind of blend together. So nutrition reflects both of them. The only difference will be the reflection of the workouts. So then you'll take it more of on a micro, you know, and look at your week and say, okay, well, Monday is my off day. So then nutrition needs to reflect your off day. Tuesday is my high intensity day. So I'm going to bump up my nutrients, say Monday night going into that workout. And then since it's such an intense workout, we're going to recover Tuesday, the rest of the day, Tuesday, and then all day Wednesday, because we're still recovering for 24 hours after that. And the nutrient shifts is just going to change on a micro level. But
okay,
how so I would say then? Like, just, we'll use that as example, because Tuesdays tend to be track days for a lot of runners, right? So, and Mondays tend to be off days. So for most people, and not everybody. So Mondays, what I would do is keep it more balanced. And then Monday evening, I would up your carbs a slight bit. There's no such thing as carbo loading anymore, but you do want to increase some whole grain carbohydrates or good sources of carbohydrates, maybe potatoes, farro, brown rice. Have that with your grilled chicken or grilled salmon and some extra veggies for micronutrients so that you're having a balance. But I would just increase the portions a tiny bit, because you're going into a hard day the next day and you need that glycogen storage. That's what that's what increasing the carbs does. If you increase your carbs Monday night, when you go to sleep, growth hormone is released and you're going to store all that glycogen. So when you wake up and you hit the track, you're going to have this boost of energy because you just fueled your body really well.
Yeah.
You have a great workout. You have to hydrate really well afterwards, because recovery is a number one. Eat some, eat a solid post-recovery snack right away, just to replenish your muscle stores. So So something with carbohydrate and protein is best, chocolate milk, a Greek yogurt, some granola, something like that. And then still increase your nutrients the rest of the day because you're continuing to recover that rest of the day. Really.
When you say like increase your nutrients, are you talking like micronutrient, like rich foods, or nutrients just in general, like total calorie?
A little bit of both. So you have your macronutrients, protein, carbs, and fat. Those are the big guys. They're macros. And then you have your micronutrients, all your vitamins and minerals. So you need both. They both work together. So the macros are like the team captains, and the micros are all your teammates, but they all work together to be successful. So you got to get extra macros. So boost protein, carbs, and good fats, as long as they're good choices of those three. Sure. And then fruits and veggies, because those are all the little worker bees that are going to help the big guys lay down muscle, recover any tissues that have been damaged through that workout. Because that's what we do. We damage our muscles when we work out, and we need to replenish them so that they grow and become stronger.
So you mentioned like right after the workout, and this has come up a few times over our podcast, like some carbs, some proteins, you know, within like an hour after the workout. Why is that so
important? Yeah, I love this. And the research is mixed on this. So we used to say take it in within 15 minutes. And now the research is more like it's a range, more like 20 to 60 minutes. So there's a little bit of confusion with that, but the bottom line is take something in within that first hour, just what you said. And the reason being is when we're working out, we have blood pumping all over our body, right? Lots of blood, your heart rate's up, and your heart is pumping blood everywhere. When you stop working out, your heart rate is still pumping. So if you eat something sooner rather than later, those nutrients are being carried through your bloodstream better and more efficiently to your muscles. The more you wait, your heart rate slows down. There's blood is getting pumped to muscles, but not as quickly. The nutrients won't get delivered as efficiently. So that's the reason behind taking that in a window of time. I usually recommend 20 to 30 minutes. You know, once you start feeling a little bit hungry afterwards is when you should take it in.
Yeah. And would that be like, so you have your hard workout, then you have your cool down, and then like, it's, I mean, your body doesn't work like this, like it's on a time clock or whatever, but the 20 to 30 minutes, like, are you talking after the hard workout, like 20 minutes into the cool down, or like after your cool down,
that's a great question. No one's ever asked me that question before. That's awesome. But yes, after the entire workout, because after the hard workout, you don't want to take something in and then go cool down. Your tummy will just not at all. So after your complete workout is done, then you take it in.
Cool. And what would be like the advantages of having, and this is probably going to come across as a stupid question, but like, so your body's primed, you know, to kind of distribute the nutrients where it needs to go afterwards. So what would be like the difference of having something like a healthier choice, even if it's, you know, like peanut butter and some bread or carbohydrates and protein, versus like, hey, I just worked out, like I just need, you know, simple sugars, carbs, and I'm gonna have a Snickers. Like, what would the Snickers do to the body that like a healthy option?
This is another great question. I love this. So you also have a lot of inflammation after you work out. So, and that's great. Your body gets inflamed, and then your body controls the inflammation. That actually helps build strength and endurance. So inflammation is a good thing, but we need to control it afterwards, or else you can set yourself up for overtraining or injury. So that's important. So what whole foods do for us is they control inflammation. So having something like peanut butter that has omega-3 fatty acids in it, that's going to control the inflammation. Whole grains, because it's going to control the inflammation. A Snickers bar is loaded with sugar. Sugar is extremely inflammatory. So if you take something with processed sugar right after a workout, now you're exacerbating that inflammation instead of controlling it. So that's a really important point about the importance of eating something that's healthy and nourishing versus something that doesn't have any nutrients in it.
If If you stick around and listen to enough of our episodes here on the Science of Sports Recovery podcast, you'll notice a common theme of importance of mobility in recovery and injury prevention. That's why I recommend checking out the Ready States Virtual Mobility Coach to help you improve your mobility, recoverability, and injury prevention. The Ready State is a brainchild of coach and athlete Dr. Kelly Starrett, who you can learn more about on episode 13. His Virtual Mobility Coach program helps athletes understand the importance of recovery, pain relief, and self-care. In other words, it helps fix the recovery side of training so you can keep seeing results from your workouts. His program will guide you through the same mobilizations used on athletes in the NFL, NHL, and MLB, provide custom tools for pain relief, give you customized pre and post exercise mobilizations based on your training and sports schedule, and deliver daily mobilizations to keep you on track to achieve your goals. You put your heart and soul into your workouts. Make sure you get the most of them by going to thereadystate.com/Jace. Again, that's thereadystate.com/JASE. The link will also be in the show notes. Now, back to the show. Yeah. And you brought up a good point that I want to just highlight, because sometimes when we, there's a stigma, I think, with inflammation, like inflammation is bad.
Right.
It's not bad. We just don't want, like, it's a stimulus. And I think that's kind of more the right way to think about it. Like, you got done training. Now there's inflammation that stimulates muscle regrowth and, you know, better growth, or, you know, stronger muscles. But we don't want to add to that with something that's not going to stimulate muscle growth, because then it's just taken away from your body's ability to repair, like, your muscles. But the other thing we don't want to do is think of inflammation as, like, the enemy, because then we start getting into, like, oh, well, I should take ibuprofen right after I work out because, you know, that reduces inflammation. And I don't know if, like, you've done studies on, like, ibuprofen afterwards or anything, but could you just speak to, like, why inflammation isn't the enemy, and, like, why ibuprofen isn't the answer to recovery?
Basically, ibuprofen's like a band-aid. So, and it'll control it a little bit quicker. We don't want to control that inflammation too quickly, because we want our body to work the way it needs to work. Think about, like, when you cut your finger, get a paper cut, right? There's a lot of inflammation in there when you cut it, because it's a trauma to your skin. And that's a good thing. That's part of the healing process. So if you cut your finger and take an Advil, you're decreasing that inflammation right away, and it's not going to heal as properly as if you skip the Advil and maybe had salmon, right? Omega-3s. That's going to control that inflammation slower. It's also going to provide nutrients to help all those tissues work together. The same thing happens to your muscles. So when we do a super hard run, say your quads are super inflamed, right? Because we just did sprints for 45 minutes. Now, if we took an ibuprofen, those quad muscles, the inflammation would be controlled within like 45 minutes. Really, we really want to take something like a peanut butter sandwich and control it over the course of the next couple hours, 3 hours, when you're metabolizing and absorbing all those nutrients. And then it can happen in a more efficient way, because now not only does it have the omega-3s, which will decrease inflammation, but it also has other nutrients, B vitamins, vitamin C, protein, fiber, which are giving the whole muscle more nutrients to recover and control inflammation. It just, nutrients give your body what it needs to do its job the best. Medication is there. There's a place for Advil after surgeries and stuff, but not for exercise on a consistent basis, because then you're actually stopping your body's natural processes. And so that's the best way to explain that.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for going down that alley with me. I want to get to the baseline, and then in a real world example of how this increase should kind of look like. Because it's one thing to say like, yeah, increase your carbs, your fats prior, or your carbs prior, than, you know, proteins, fats, carbs, everything afterwards. But it's then we get into the question, okay, how much, you know? So providing like, it's just an example of, you know, right around 45 minutes of like hard exertion and RPE scale of like, you know, 8 or 9 typical workout in the afternoon. What should your, if you know kind of like your baseline intake of what you typically do, how much should you increase the night prior and then leading into that morning and then afterwards?
It'll be a little bit different for each athlete, just depending on what their metabolism looks like, what their body weight looks like, and what their goals are. But in general, I always recommend 1 to 2 servings extra the night before a really hard workout, which just means like, if you're going to have chicken, vegetables, and a baked potato, I would say have 2 chicken breasts and have maybe 1.5 baked potatoes or even 2 baked potatoes, if that's not too much food for your stomach, and, you know, an extra portion of vegetables, because then it's a bigger meal. Yes. As long as you can stomach it. And the athletes that can't stomach that much food, that, you know, don't like to eat 2 dinners, kind of, what I would say is have 2 dinners. So just break it up. So half maybe at 6 o'clock and another half at 9 o'clock, or a couple hours apart, however you want to time it, because that'll also help the glycogen storage. Another way of doing it is spreading the food out throughout the whole day. So if Monday is your rest day, then just boosting 1 serving at every meal, breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, dinner, so that your overall intake throughout the whole day is higher. That will also increase the glycogen storage. But 1 to 2 servings of every vegetables, carbs, protein, or carbs, protein, fat, rather. Sorry, I'm a big vegetable person. Will be enough. Yeah. Like, you don't have to sit there and eat 5 plates of pasta the night before, I think, which is like kind of an old school carb loading thought, right? We don't have to do that. In fact, that can actually slow you down instead of speed you up, and also create a little bit of inflammation, speaking of inflammation. But if we're just boosting 1 to 2 servings of every food group or macronutrient, that's plenty enough to increase glycogen storage overnight.
You said it could increase inflammation. Like, is that like, if you kind of get to that point where you're just stuffed beyond, you know, stuffed, and all you want to do is lay down on the couch and take a nap, is that like at the point where just eating too much causes inflammation, or is
eating too, what I meant to say was eating too much refined carbohydrates. So if you eat too much just pasta without the protein, without the fat, without the veggies, that would cause inflammation just because it's too many carbohydrates without a balance of other things.
Got it. So it's not the quantity, it's the quality.
Yep.
Got it. Okay. So then leading into the next morning, right before the workout and then after the workout, what like,
So timing here is key. So if you're doing an afternoon workout, say we're working out at 3, then breakfast. So right when you wake up in the morning, you have to top off that glycogen because your blood sugars have dipped a little bit overnight because we didn't eat. So we want to top it off. So oatmeal, some chopped nuts, diced banana, something like that, that has complex carbohydrates, omega-3 fats, and some protein. And then I would time it up to when you want to work out. Almost work backwards. So if you're going to run at 3, your last meal probably wants to be between 12:30 and 1. You want to give yourself a nice, at least 2 hours to digest that. Some people need more, some people need less. That may be a little bit individualized. But as long as that food is absorbed and digested before you hit the track. And then I would back that up a little bit more. So 12:31, I would have a mid-morning snack, say at 10 o'clock. So you're feeding your body enough times throughout the day, and then you'll be good to go.
Got it. Okay. And then after the workout, we have, you know, like our chocolate milk or, you know, protein bar, or however you want to kind of feel that after within that 60 minute window. Is it as simple as, you know, that 1 to 2 extra servings then that night?
Evening hopefully meal? You'll be hungry. See, this is the beauty of your body too, is when your body needs nutrients, it sends your body a hunger signal. So it's really important to be aware of that and in tune with how hungry you are after workouts. And yes, and not let you go overboard. So sometimes we get starving and then just grab that half gallon of ice cream and start eating it after our hard workout.
Yeah.
recovery snack right after. So we're replenishing a little bit. And then maybe 2 hours afterwards, have a sandwich. Let's say half a sandwich while you're doing an afternoon workout. So 3 o'clock, four. Yeah, you'd be ready for dinner at that point. So then you can actually go and have a full dinner. As long as it's balanced with all your nutrients, you're feeding your body what it needs. You're quenching the hunger. You're helping recovery. And then you can even have a second healthy snack afterwards. So say a Greek yogurt with berries, so that you're continuing to recover, because you're still continuing to recover for 24 hours after a hard workout.
Mm-hmm. So then do you just continue like the next day, like a little extra breakfast than you normally have, and then like back down to what you would, you know, kind of your baseline?
And then you just plan it based on what your next workout is. So do you have like a hill repeat workout the next day? You may have to do the same kind of pattern. It gets a little complicated because as athletes, we're always either recovering from a workout or preparing for a workout, you know, so middle place where you're always thinking about that yesterday and the next day. And so you may just have to go back on that cycle of increasing, decreasing. Every single thing you put in your mouth needs to reflect your workouts, your training schedule.
Yeah. So I'm curious if you see this trend or if it's just something that's crazy for me. I do long runs or long workouts, but it more not so like long workouts, but like long runs. So like 2 hours or, you know, at least an hour and a half to 2 hours, whether I do them like just easy or hard, it usually takes me like the next day and then I'm just like ravaging food. But that day, I don't know if it's like my stomach is just kind of worked up or what have you, but I'm usually not as hungry that day. If I like, should I force myself to have that extra food, or is that just a signal my body is telling me, hey, now I'm like ready to intake the
nutrients. That's another great question. So exercise actually is an appetite suppressant, so it's very common not to be hungry after workouts, and that's where we get into trouble because we're not taking in the fuel that we need to recover from. So while I hate to say force feed, because I'm a big proponent of just listening to your body's hunger cues, I would just eat smaller, more frequent meals so that you can handle a little bit. You can handle a chocolate milk or a peanut butter sandwich, and you don't need to have a big meal. But if you have smaller little meals, say every 2 hours for the rest of the day, because you're not starving, you just need a little bit, then wait until your hunger increases, maybe the next morning, to really have that bigger solid meal. You have to individualize it, because if I asked you to have a big meal and you're not hungry, you're going to feel awful and you're just not going to do it. It's not going to help anybody, and especially not your performance. So figure out what's going on with your own body and figure out what works the best.
Yeah. Well, a disclaimer here. I tended to kind of just listen to my body, but then I got way too skinny. And like, I couldn't eat enough to keep on the weight that I needed, because I literally just got bored of eating.
That's interesting.
And I think that like, unless if you're an athlete and training at, you know, a certain level, like the term bored of eating, like, is, you've never heard of it, but then like, if you can relate to it, you can relate. But if you can't, you're probably like, well, I'm stupid over here.
Well, you know, I mean, just like I said, it suppresses our appetites. So sometimes you really don't. I mean, I'm in the same boat. Sometimes when I go out for a long run, I come back and I'm like, I'm not hungry. I just know I need something. And that's, you know, you can find different things that you like that will satisfy your recovery and your need not to take in a lot of food. And in that case, maybe a more dense food would be better for you. Like a handful of nuts would be great because it's loaded with nutrients and calories, but you only need a little bit and not a whole lot.
That's a great point. Yeah. Is there any way, and I don't know if this has been studied or just kind of came to my mind, like, is there a way to increase your appetite like afterwards? Is like anything you can do to kind of like, hey, I want to eat. Like, how do I do the first step?
Not that I know of, to be honest. I mean, I'm sure there's medications, but we don't want to go down that road.
No,
I think the best way to increase your appetite is to kind of do what I just said. If you eat little amounts of foods every 2 hours, your body will get used to taking in food 2 hours. And the science behind that is then if you don't, you will actually increase your hunger level. So you're teaching your body to be hungry just by timing what you're doing.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Cool. All right. So anything else on phase three that we should be looking at as far as nutrition before we get into like the championship or?
I think if you repeat the patterns that we just talked about and just make sure that you're increasing your intake, nutritional intake as your training is increasing, then you'll notice a difference. And that's the biggest thing is you will feel better. You will run better. Your motivation will be better to eat this way because you are performing better. And that's where that connection happens. That's where the light bulb goes off and you're like, oh, wow, this is really working. And that's your motivation to keep going. And it's different for everybody. Yeah. But once you figure out what works for you, then you go with it.
Awesome. Cool. So getting into the last phase of training when you're like, okay, my training load is coming back down because I am ready for my peak performance. Best times, you know, best performance, feeling the best. I see a lot of athletes get nutrition wrong at this point because they keep eating like they were, or they slack on their nutrition because they're like, well, I'm not running as much now or what have you, or it's just like a mental break. I don't know. But what like should we be thinking about as we're deloading our workouts, but want to keep that maximum performance?
Yeah. Potential? So this is a really crucial thing to get right. And again, it takes some practice and you may do some things wrong before you get it right. So just know that. But when you're decreasing, when you start going into a taper, you're decreasing your overall volume of training, right? And your intensity, which means your nutrients have to reflect that same kind of theory as the rest of the year. But right now it's really crucial because you're prepping your body to do the best you possibly can. So you still want to stay away from like the refined sugar because that's going to increase inflammation. You want to, and the whole decreasing in nutrients is interesting because we are hungry because we've just ate a lot through your training, right? So it's tricky and you can be hungrier. So hydration comes into a point here too. Hydration and a little bit of extra fiber can keep us fuller, and even though we're decreasing our overall intake. So that's key. And I'll mention a little bit about hydration real quick before I get into the rest of it. Is hydration before a race is really key because we want to go into your race optimally hydrated. So you want to make sure that you're drinking enough water and taking in enough electrolytes so that you're holding on to that water before. So I would say like the week leading up to your race to do that. Hopefully your body is really prepped and you're doing a great job in hydration during training. So that doesn't feel awkward or new, but that will also help all the nutrients that you're eating do what they need to do and prep your body weight. Great. The danger that comes into not decreasing your overall intake is you can actually, and you won't gain weight per se, but you can actually, get a little bit bloated, let's say, because you're not sweating out a lot of stuff, you're not burning a lot of carbs, and you can feel a little bit sluggish, and you don't want to get to the start line and feel, you know, sluggish and bloated. So that's really the most important part about just minimizing that intake.
Yeah, I experienced that now that you think of it, like, or now that you said it and I thought of it, that in my experience, I would feel great through like the highest volume, highest intensity training because I ate a lot or at least tried to eat as much as I could. And then when we come down to like deloading for even just like a week and we're also traveling to different places, so it's harder to keep like your natural diet that you would normally eat, you're, you know, eating out at different restaurants and that kind of stuff, maybe that you haven't been before, I'd come into the race just like, or that day, you know, just like my stomach kind of feels bloated, like you said, not like that I'm not heavier than I was. I just feel heavier and I feel bloated. And it sounds like it's just because I didn't I probably ate things that I didn't normally eat, which my body was reacting to, but I also didn't decrease the amount in accordance to what I was doing that
week. And it's a tricky place to be in. And you're right. You feel a little bit off because we're used to doing so much and now we're not doing a lot and your body doesn't like those extremes. So you definitely feel a little bit off during taper. So that's normal. Mm-hmm. But if you actually reflected your intake on your output, you would feel a little bit better, a little bit lighter, a little bit less like dead leggy feel, mm-hmm. Because you just have, but it's a tricky place to be in because you still want to store glycogen for your race, especially if it's an endurance race. So it's this sweet spot that you need to find where you feel good. And it takes practice to do that. It's a little trial and error.
Yeah. At what level does a race become an endurance race? How many minutes?
That's a great question too. Cause for some people a 10K is an endurance race, it depends if you're a sprinter or endurance athlete. In my mind, from a nutrition perspective, I think you really need to start thinking about nutrition at the half marathon level. That's where you can get through a 10K. And most people can get through a 10K without worrying too much about loading up on glycogen stores and that sort of thing. Unless you're an Olympian and racing it, then I think you really need to pay attention to it. So intensity matters. Sure. But I think the 13-mile mark is something you really need to, because you're tapering, right? You taper for a half marathon. You can't just go do it. Well, you probably could, but so you're tapering. So you really need to worry about that glycogen storage issue. Marathon, definitely. Ultras, definitely. Obviously, in the triathlon world, the same thing. For a half, you really need to start planning it.
Cool. Okay. So we're getting... That was a great conversation.
Topic. I could talk all day.
I want to just quickly, before we get into how people can find you, if you got a little time here, to just share a story on how you've seen the periodization of a nutrition plan, like an athlete that came to you and that really stuck out on here were, their performance before, and then we implemented this periodization and really focusing on nutrition, and then they went to the next level. Do you have a story that kind of sticks out in your mind
when I explain that? She was a triathlete, so and a pretty solid triathlete too, but really wasn't tuning in on nutrition at all. And in fact, she didn't eat poorly, but she just didn't reflect it with her training. So she was just, eating healthy, but not timing it towards a workout or not thinking about recovery, just didn't really have that knowledge base. So when we tweaked a couple things and we did a lot in terms of, increasing protein, she was very, very low in her protein intake, which for women is pretty huge too. And especially at this time, this particular triathlete I'm talking about was in her mid 30s, 35, let's say, I think 35. Okay. And she wanted to qualify for nationals, USAT nationals, and she really wanted to go to Worlds. So what we did was we spent a full season doing exactly what we're talking about right here, periodizing her nutrition around her training. And right off the bat in her base season, she felt so much different because she had the energy. She was like, normally when I'm just training, I feel tired, fatigued. I don't even want to go out for a run or a ride because I'm beat. She was okay once she got started, but she never really had the motivation to get out there. And then once we started increasing her protein, then she was not only riding better and stronger, but she was recovering faster. She never had that fatigue factor the next day. Because as a triathlete, when you're training for these half Ironman events, you're doing long stuff every day at some points too. You're doing, maybe a 50-mile ride on Saturday, and then you're doing a 13-mile run on Sunday, and then you're lifting weights on Monday. Like you're just doing back to back to back, and she wasn't recovering. So we increased her protein, and she was prioritizing protein at every meal and snack, which is huge. And we were increasing her carbs a little bit. I think a lot of endurance women, especially now, decrease their carbs because they think, the keto diet is huge, or, we need to intermittent fast or whatever. They hear all these things and it's not true. All these fad diets really aren't helping us athletically. So when she boosted that, all of a sudden her energy came back and she was like, oh, hello. Now I can run 8-minute miles where I used to be slugging away at 10s, and her performance skyrocketed. So she did. And then the other thing we really dialed in was for hydration. So she wasn't really hydrating. She did have a couple kids. So it's hard to drink water and be in the bathroom all day when you're hydrating. So what we did was we not only increased her fluid intake, but also increased her sodium and potassium intake so that she was storing water in her muscles instead of having it just pass through her body. So that's an interesting thing for athletes to get so that they're really absorbing so that they're hydrated. So she went into every workout well hydrated and well fueled, and she nailed all her workouts. Therefore, when she went into taper and race phase, she could perform top notch, and she did make nationals. And then the next season she made worlds. Yeah.
Wow.
Very cool.
That's so cool. Yeah. I think like just even the beginning of your story there was so powerful of the, she not wanting to go out the door and get started, and then to like feeling like ready to go and get out the door. Cause like that is a sticking point for not only like your average Joe, but elite athletes too. I mean, like my senior year of college, we ended up getting fifth in the nation at our cross country team. So like we were an elite team. But man, and if my wife is listening to this when this goes out, she'll laugh at this, but I don't know how many times I told her, because we were married at the time, I said, Kiana, I'm retiring. I'm not doing this anymore in the summer, you know. And then, you know, she'd see me out the door like, you know, 30 minutes later or whatever after I procrastinated a little bit. But there's so many days that I did not want to get out the door. And, you know, knowing kind of my history of just under fueling and getting to a point where I was too skinny, which probably led into burnout and some other issues that I had. If I would have just increased my, you know, protein intake and intake overall, I could have had a little bit different summer there.
Yeah, body composition, you just made me think of something else. Body composition thing is huge. And even in reference to this triathlete that I was speaking about, so her fat content, her body fat and lean muscle mass content really, I mean, it was amazing the change. So, and she was an athlete. She wasn't overweight by any means, but when we did change her nutritional composition, her body composition changed. So not only was she feeling better, but she was physiologically stronger because she had so much extra lean muscle mass and less fat mass. So that has to do with linked between energy too. So a lot of the reasons we say, oh, it's time to go for a run. Well, I think I'll just have another cup of coffee and do it in an hour or 2 hours. And all of a sudden it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon and then you're drudging, getting out there because you have to, and you don't feel good. And so body composition is hugely reflected with nutrition, which is reflected in your energy levels. It's all connected. They're all different puzzle pieces.
Awesome. Well, we could sit here and talk for hours, but maybe we'll just have you back on and sometime in the future. But let's get into like where can people connect with you if they need more, you know, Jen in their lives. You do have Instagram and your handle is Jen.
Is it Giles? Jen Giles, so it's Jen Giles. Eat for Sport is my Instagram handle. But I'm also on TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn. Jen Giles or Jen Giles Eat for Sport. I also have a great Facebook group, which I have athletes, coaches, and parents of athletes in. That would be, it's so great. I have a great group of people in there. We answer questions. We talk about fun facts. We do meal prep ideas. And it's a great community. And that's called the Sports Nutrition Hub. So more than welcome to hop in there and grab. It's a free group. And we have a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'll have links to all that in the show notes as well. And I know we were talking before you have like this self-assessment for athletes when it comes to sports nutrition. Could you briefly talk on that and where an athlete could go to find that?
So it's a thing I use with a lot of my athletes when I work on them, that they self-assess themselves, and it's a checklist. So you go through and you say, I do this activity sometimes, always, never. And it really opens up your eyes to what you need to work on first. So works on your weaknesses. And I have created a self-assessment for everyone to share. It's for free. Just download it. And I'm inviting everybody to go grab that too. It's a great thing to do and really sit down and look at what you're doing well and what you're not doing not so well. And then those are the things you can work on first.
Awesome. And where do they?
I'll send you the link for that. That's like a website link that a landing page that you guys can.
Okay. Sounds good. So if you're driving or if you're doing the dishes or whatever, go look in the show notes for all the good stuff there. Jen, thanks so much for
being a part of the show. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, episode's over. If you found value in this episode, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. And if you haven't already yet subscribed, do so now so you don't miss any important topics in the coming week. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, please send them my way. I am most responsive on Instagram. That's at jcheese, J-A-E, cheese, like the food, or email me directly at jace, J-A-S-E, at scienceofsportsrecovery.com. Talk soon.